I'm awfully glad that you introduced the instrument today, because in a way that's what Beethoven does in the beginning of this quartet. It's as if he's introducing the instruments not only to each other but to the listeners. There's a word here from the viola, then a comment from the other instruments, another phrase, and then before we know it, we're all acquainted and we're playing together. Let's play that beginning.
Thank you. things turned out, this was the last complete work that Beethoven wrote. This quartet, Opus 135, except for the finale of Opus 130, the replacement movement that he wrote to take the place of the original finale, as we related last in our last program. And about this Opus 135, it's interesting to note that the essence of quartet writing, the interweaving of the four lines, a point that we've been harping on from time to time in the earlier programs of this series, has reached its quintessence for Beethoven. Now he literally puts the work together before our very ears, coagulating it.
As a matter of fact, Vince, if you look through your score, you'll see there are very few moments where we're all lined up together. For the most part, we're going off in different directions, and it's like a musical jigsaw.
Well, this the constant banter between the voices of the quartet results in a movement of delicate tracery. But don't let that fool you. There's still quite a wallop in this music, as there always is with Beethoven. It's almost as if the handing of the voices from one instrument to the other builds up momentum. And then at these places where they do move together, it serves as a sort of a springboard for further conversation.
Well, let's look at some of the material. Here's an example of a very graceful language moment. Here's a spot where we all move together for a moment. And, excuse me, now we push off in different directions. One more spot. Now we're all going to move together again, but a little more extended.
You know, this gathering of voices, the lining up voices so that they all move together, makes a kind of signpost at the end of the exposition section in this movement. And remember back in the first program, in our consideration of Opus 18.3, we pointed back to that discussion a couple of times. One of the points we took up was the idea that the short, sharp chords were a device used by Beethoven to mark the end of the exposition and of the recapitulation section. And we notice that happening in a couple of other first movements, the use of that signpost device. Here, this gathering, this lining up of voices, is used as the signpost at the end of all three sections, the exposition, the development, and the recapitulation.
Right. See, here it is at the development part, and it has a rather march-like sound. Back at the recapitulation.
That's the end of the development.
Is it?
Am I right?
Correct. Now, here's the same kind of spot at the end of the recapitulation, which will lead us to the coda.
Here's
every case, this conversational that we just arrived at follows the march-like section. And at the very end of the movement, at the coda that we just arrived at, this conversational element continues. In fact, it builds up to a point where everybody says the first phrase together, unison, very definitely. The phrase which, up till now, has only appeared in one instrument, stated by the viola at the very beginning. I'll say it together. Right on there. Let's go back and play this coda and watch this conversation develop to this point and see how we get to the end. Quite a bit more humor, too, in the way he has us finished precisely, delicately stepping out together. Let's backtrack a little bit, a few bars, and approach this spot again. There's certainly a great deal of humor in this writing, but it's a mature kind of humor. It's a mature kind of fun-making, really, and it seems to be born of a wisdom, an understanding of a man who's lived long and intensely, and a man in whom the maturing process has been speeded up.
You know, this makes me think of a very worthwhile comparison that we ought to make at this point. Continuing on this maturing process, we will note from a complete performance of 135 that it's one of the shortest quartets Beethoven ever wrote. The only other one this short is Opus 95, which we considered a couple of programs back. And it's interesting to compare these two short works to see what differences there are between them. At least let's compare the first movement. How about playing the opening of the first movement of 95? And I believe it would be the best way to recall the terrific compression of that movement, the shortness of theme, the shortness of the contrasting areas, the way those contrasts are crowded in one upon the other. Enough to remind us about it. And now, with this refresher, if we go back and play again the opening of 135, let's just touch that. Sense of the difference in shortness. Here it's short not by compression, not by trying to cram a lot of material into a very high density, a very great density, but rather it's the picking and choosing. It's the peak of artistic discernment.
Well, that certainly doesn't mean that Beethoven has given up his habit of writing a furious scherzo, a hard-driving one, because this scherzo in this quartet, 135, is a typical example, and it's fast, it's furious, it's in fact, it's almost diabolic.
It's scherzo, even though it isn't called scherzo. It's called vivace, but it has a scherzo spirit.
Mm-hmm. Let's play the beginning. Music just bursts to the surface at times with these loud measures that come through. And the power that's being held back here, so to speak, is really evident in the middle section, the trio of this scherzo. Just listen to the three lower instruments here pounding away on a phrase. And I have to dance, if I may say so, fantastically tricky little dance above this figure. All right, then, that's enough.
Well, let's put it all together.
This torrent of sound subsides. We're back at the beginning section, and the movement ends with just one solitary loud note, the cabin.
Things about creative genius is that there doesn't seem to be any end to its inspiration. Remember in the last program, the Cavatina of Opus 130, you would think that a man couldn't do anything after that. He would have no more sources of inspiration. But if we look at Opus 132, another of the late quartet, we'll see that there's no end to what he can do. Let's play a little bit of the song.
Now, we go back to 135, we see here in the third movement, there's a really wonderful example of a mood of very quiet tranquility, which starts in the viola. Becomes questioning now for a while, like this. Quiet assurance returns for the ending now.
It seems to me, gentlemen, that the music you played gives superb musical expression to the sort of thing Wordsworth meant when he wrote about agonies, exaltations, love, and man's unconquerable mind.
Very well put.
Very well. It's put in a fine literary way the sense of ultimate optimism that we've always had about Beethoven's music, especially, and we point to this repeatedly in speaking about his quartets, especially in regard to the closing measures, the closing movements of his work, because almost without fail, there's this sense of winning out, this overcoming all, that no matter what has happened during the course of the work, stands it at the very end. And this is most strikingly borne in on us in this last movement, where Beethoven provides one of his few titles to an abstract instrumental movement. Here he calls it Der schwer gefasste Entschluss, or the difficult resolution, the difficult problem. And he even gives us the elements of the problem in a kind of musical cue line, music and text, before the movement starts. This is one element. Let's play that. That's a questioning line.
And the words are there. Must it be?
Must it be? Must it be? And here's the answer. It must be, as he says.
There are many different explanations for the source of this musical dialogue, even including one as humdrum as the fact that, that his landlady was asking him for the rent. And he said, must it be? And she said, yes, it must be. But regardless of what the source of the idea, it doesn't have any effect on the end result. And all we know is that when we come to this movement, we're faced with music which indicates an opposition between dark and light, between this kind of music. This kind of music.
Music is really the product of always of a personality, especially great music, the man itself behind the composition. This is not to suggest that there's any direct relationship between an immediate experience running right into a composition, but the general makeup, the general outlook of the man is evident in a work. And this sense of all-conquering drive, of force, of ultimate optimism is something that is made all the clearer to us if we speak for a moment about the kind of man Beethoven was, the kind of life he had. It's remarkable to think that Beethoven was working at music from very early, I think from the age of four on, that he spent his childhood as the oldest son of the family of a rather alcoholic father, musically talented though the father was. As a matter of fact, Beethoven came of a musically talented line of descent. That in his youth, he was the support of a motherless family. That his mature life was spent unmarried, childless, yearning for an affection that he tried to find suffering from a loneliness that he tried to escape first by forcing his affection on his brothers and then, with unfortunate results, on his nephew Carl.
I think there's another conflict in Beethoven's life. You know, he believed in personal freedom and dignity. And yet, as a composer, he had...
Everybody going, coming.
Most well, I would say that I am a gentleman, yes. And then another thing, too, maybe my nationality has a lot to do. I was born in Spain, and we feel different about it.
Vacuum packed for...
I think anybody has to be astonished that he was able to keep on composing when he was deaf, because any good composer, and certainly one of Beethoven's stature, is able to hear everything he writes in his mind, hears it, so to speak. But I think, and more than that, we're almost indebted to this accident of his deafness, maybe for the to a certain degree for the quality of the music that he wrote, especially in his later years. Perhaps it's a result of the fact that he was forced to listen within himself so much that gives us the music which reaches each of us so directly.
And I think, again, what sparks his genius, what makes him so impressive as a man, is his constant willingness to overcome every impulse, and he had plenty of them, to despondency. Getting back to this last movement, we can find him setting the problem once more, finally, in this last musical chapter of his life, so to speak. Shortly before the end, of lamentation goes on for a short time more, but soon the positive element, the it must be element, returns.
To the end, it steals quietly in, but finishes radiantly.
Gentlemen, that the greatness of Beethoven is subtly and beautifully expressed in his music, and he was not only a great composer, but probably one of the most impressive human beings that ever lived, and gives truth again to the dictum that it's really art that gives meaning to man's long ascent from the anthropoid. And since man has now invented electronics, we bring you a television recording of Beethoven's Opus 135. Roll it.
Thank you.